From the Sky News Centre at 6, Theresa May admits England's local elections have been very difficult for the Conservatives after big losses. She was heckled by one of her supporters as she addressed the Welsh Tory conference.
Why don't you resign?
There were also defeats for Labour, with voters seemingly voicing their Brexit frustrations at the ballot box. Leader Jeremy Corbyn admits his party hoped for better results.
We always want to do better. That's what we're in politics for. That's what we exist for. We are going to campaign and continue to campaign to try and keep and bring people together in negotiations over Brexit, but also to oppose austerity.
The Lib Dems enjoyed their best English local election results for at least 15 years. The Greens and independent candidates also gained support. Results have also started coming in Northern Ireland, with support for both Sinn Féin and the DUP holding up so far. Counting takes slightly longer due to the proportional voting system. In other news, more than 1 million people have been evacuated from India's eastern coast as a huge cyclone hits the region. It's brought rain and winds of more than 120 miles an hour, causing widespread damage and flooding in low-lying areas. There's another protest taking place in London over climate change. 8 young people have chained themselves to the Houses of Parliament. That's what the suffragettes did more than 100 years ago. With the royal baby announcement due any day now, Prince Harry has postponed a trip to the Netherlands next week. He says it's to make logistics easier for the press during the trip. That's the latest. I'm Kit Bradshaw.
London to Johannesburg, Harare to Kampala, Lagos and Accra.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. Tony Gosling helping me review this week's news is Green leader Eleanor Cumley, Lib Dem councillor for Hengrove and Whitchurch Park, Tim Kent, and from Avonmouth, environmental campaigner Ian Robinson. Martin Summers is here too. What a full studio. After the 7 o'clock news, where will Bilderberg 2019 be? The secret meetings of some of the most powerful corporate titans from banks and media and monarchs in the NATO countries, which for the first 20 years was chaired by an ex-SS officer. Well, no solid leaks, but some good educated guesswork. Where will Bilderberg be this year? And Lebanese publish a Saudi cable to their Sri Lankan embassy, which implicates them in the Easter attacks on churches, which left 250 dead, 45 of them children. And Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is back. Whack-a-mole. He's not dead after all. And he's looking a bit greyer in a video encouraging a new wave of attacks on the West. But who is this guy? And Blackwater recruiting mercenaries to topple Venezuela's President Maduro as an apparent coup attempt fails. Plus, Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt threatens Russia Today, accuses them of being a propaganda outlet, as if the BBC isn't. And YouTube block Iran's state media channel. What are they afraid of? That's all in the second hour, after the US-owned Comcast News at 7. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows around 5 Celsius, some light rain this weekend around 14. Sunny spells tomorrow, cloudy on Sunday. Next week, I was going to say the bank holiday. It's going to begin warm at 14 Celsius on Monday. Mainly cloudy, though, next week with some showers. Next weekend, the 11th and 12th of May, highs of 14 Celsius, warming up sunny spells. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Joining me to review this week's news is Eleanor Cumley, who's the Green leader, and Lib Dem councillor for Hengrove and Whitchurch Park, Tim Kemp. Well, maybe you could start us off, Tim, with just some thoughts about these election results for the local elections. You've done rather well, haven't you?
It's been a good day for Liberal Democrats today and I think progressive forces. I think people have gone to the polls and made very clear they were fed up with the Conservative councils across the country. I think it's a vote based on local issues but also national issues. And certainly we're very pleased to see somewhere in the region of perhaps upwards towards 600 gains today.
Eleanor, Greens, you've been doing quite well too. It's almost as if the parties that lost didn't really want to come in tonight, but the ones that did quite well are here.
Yeah, I'll talk to anyone about election results today. It's been a great day for the Greens today. Considering that 2015 was the height of the last Green surge, for us to be adding hundreds more seats on top of those really feels like an amazing achievement.
The BBC most of the day was saying, well, Labour and the Conservatives have done badly. Well, it's sort of true, but actually the Conservatives, it's been a total disaster, hasn't it, Eleanor? Why do you think that is?
I think people have seen just how incompetent... I mean, people have known for a long time that Conservatives in government can be unkind and inhumane, but today, up to today, they've seen now that they're incompetent as well, and that's really the last fig leaf of their claim to power.
You haven't mentioned Brexit, because surely that's why many people who would have voted Conservative in the past have just abandoned them this time.
Yes, I think that the way they've handled Brexit is what has laid their inability to run a government bare.
I agree. Looking at this, I mean, clearly what's happened is people have said, we're fed up, whether they remain or leave. Whether the Conservative remainer, they've gone and voted Liberal Democrat or Green or anyone but Conservative. And if they're a Conservative leaver, a lot of them have just stayed at home. I think what's important, though, is that we don't gloat too much and that we do accept that there's a lot here about reconnecting with people.
Now, I'm hoping we're joined on the line by Darren Hughes. Are you there, Darren?
Good evening, yes I am.
Fantastic. Look, it's one of those, if at first you don't succeed, keep going. Anyway, Darren, you are just to explain, is it Chief Executive of Electoral Reform?
Correct, I'm the Chief Executive of the Electoral Reform Society, which is an independent campaign organisation trying to improve politics across the UK.
But you're not from Britain, are you? I can tell by your accent.
I'm from New Zealand originally, that's right.
I think some might say that there's probably a lot more democracy in New Zealand than there is over here. But anyway, look, you're concerned, I know, about some of the people who've tried to vote in the local elections this time have failed. And actually, there's a bit of a pattern going on, isn't there, across Britain, where this is increasingly happening during our elections. So can you just explain why you're worried about the changing rules for people whether or not they're allowed to vote?
Sure thing. Well, there's lots of things to be concerned about the present state of affairs in our politics, and I'm happy to mention a few of those. But this is an example of trials that are taking place across England to force people to produce mandatory ID when they go to vote. Now, you know, on first hearing of that, it might seem like a reasonable idea, not asking too much. But the only reason to introduce this policy is that the government say they're worried about people who show up at a polling station pretending to be someone else. This is known as voter personation. But in actual fact, out of all of the many problems afflicting British politics, people showing up pretending to be someone else is not one of them. So what they've done is put in place these kind of barriers to voters who don't have photographic ID, and there are actually millions of people who don't. That might come as news to some of your listeners, but that's the truth for a lot of people. Or secondly, a much bigger group, in my opinion, which is people who go down to the polling station, they're honest, legitimate voters, they're on the register, they're the person they say they are, but for whatever reason, they've forgotten their ID, they don't have it with them, they're on the way back from doing a run or a walk or taking the kids out, taking the dog out, and they don't have any ID on them, and they're denied a vote. And all of this to crack a problem that doesn't exist. So that's why we're very critical about this, what looks like the beginnings of voter suppression.
Yes, well, that's absolutely right. Often it's people who are the poorer that don't actually jump through all these various bureaucratic hoops. And so, look, I mean, tell us what you think the real problems are, because obviously there are some real problems with democracy and people vote fraud of various sorts. And I think maybe we could start with a potential fraud around which we've seen over the last, at least certainly 15 years. I've seen quite a lot of examples of this with postal ballots, for example.
Well, some areas are trying to look at that, but there's one area that we have a lot of evidence of now that's part of our modern world, which is a big influence to try a type of voter fraud, which is to mislead the public in big numbers, and that's some of the what we call the Wild West of digital online campaigning, where the regulations just haven't kept up with the modern world. And that's actually a real thing. We've seen that in elections and votes here in this country and in many others around the world as well. And the government should be putting up a lot of work and effort into trying to combat that kind of, online subversion of democratic processes. What we don't have are thousands or tens of thousands or even hundreds of people who show up at polling stations stealing one vote at a time by pretending to be someone else. And if we just kind of think that through, what it means that you or I go to vote in the afternoon at the one polling station we're told we have to go to, and we're told, sorry, you can't have your vote because you've already voted today, and you know full well that you haven't. You know that if someone else has been given your ballot paper, that has been electoral fraud and theft. Now, if that happened, most of us would be, you know, screaming to the rafters about the injustice about that. And that's just not a feature of our democracy, which is why you've got to question why the government is so intent on ignoring the online demonstrable abuse of our electoral laws and trying to turn our attention onto a problem that doesn't exist with voter fraud in respect of needing ID. And that's just going to force people who are younger, who are older, or you know, people have maybe given up driving, don't travel anymore, so they don't have photographic ID. And I just think that we're going to affect far many more decent, honest voters than this kind of diversion from the government about a problem that doesn't exist.
Okay, look, Darren, why this diversion? There must be some sort of reason behind it. They can't just be doing it because they're twiddling their thumbs, they've got nothing else to do.
Well, I mean, there's a full agenda of things they could be getting on with to improve democracy. So you're right, you've got to question why that is. And I've been quite surprised by how, sort of almost militant the government have been about these trials. They're determined to do them. And because the problem can't be evidenced, and because they react so badly to organisations like ours, we're heading up a 40-campaign organisation a coalition group of all sorts of groups that are concerned about the welfare of citizens and voters, and they attack us for criticising their policy. So that tells me that we're getting under their skin. And the conclusion I've come to is that they're trying to import some of the ideas from the Republicans in America, where they try and start off with an idea that sounds reasonable and sort of non-threatening and quite easy, and they come up with fluffy examples about collecting parcels from the post office, all this sort of thing. But we know when you fast forward the tape in America, where this leads to, it leads to hundreds of thousands of people being denied their right to vote or intimidated out of voting. And we don't want to go through down that path in Britain. I think we should be proud of our open, transparent and honest electoral administration at local level, which does rely on trust, but the evidence backs that up, rather than going down the American route, which is not about trust. We can guarantee that.
Well, Tim Kent from the Lib Dems here has got a question for you, Darren.
Well, everything you just said, Darren, I completely agree with, and clearly this is about voter suppression. But I was wondering if the Electoral Reform Society was also helping people realise that they got to the 7th of May to get an extra registration form in, and that's EU non-UK nationals. They have to produce another form, and up to another 2 million people may be disenfranchised on May the 23rd.
Well, that's right. It's critically important now that people check their eligibility and comply with the requirements, because there's no time to change any of those things between now and then. It's now less than 3 weeks away for the actual voting. So you're into next week being a critical time to get on the register. And a lot of people have got opinions about things that are happening, but they're entitled to a vote, and we need as many people on the register as possible to make sure we get a good turnout. I think one of the stories that hasn't been focused on a lot today about the local elections in England has been the turnout side. I think a lot of voters have sent a message to their usual party of supporting by not voting, but in the European elections, of course, we hope for a high turnout because it's a proportional system and there's a better chance of representation. So okay, yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I mean, we've got a first-past-the-post system. I imagine that you're advocating for a proportional system, Darren. What kind of different picture would that give us in Parliament if we were to have proportional representation?
Well, I think it would be different in a number of ways. The two ways I think about it are, number one, the number of seats would clearly be different because we'd have a voting system based on a very sound principle that the number of seats a party gets should match the number of votes they receive. And you'll see results across England today where parties have taken all the seats that were available on a council for less than half the vote. This is preposterous. So I think we'd have a much better chance of aligning the seats and the votes together, and I think that's a good democratic principle. That's on the mechanical side. The second thing I think is really important about political culture. What it would do is it would turn around our way of thinking. We have a winner-takes-all mentality. You're either in team A, B, or C, and you stick with that team and you abuse the other team. You don't work together, and any kind of working together is called compromise, and it's painted as being some absolute, you know, terrible sellout to your principles. I think if we had more parties that better and more honestly reflected the political differences across the UK, and the political culture allowed them to cooperate on policies in the House of Commons to get things done, then we would see much more effective government that were able to include more people, and we wouldn't be subjected to the kind of lurching that we get from one extreme to another in public policy. So I support a fairer proportional representation voting system for the mechanical reasons of political representation with seats, but also because of the desperate change we need to the way we do politics to encourage more cooperation, pluralism and inclusion in the way our public life takes place in the UK.
Okay, finally, we're about to vote in European elections too, although a lot of people thought we weren't going to, but we don't actually get to vote for Manfred Weber, do we, who apparently has been going to be made the President of Europe. Is there a case for having direct voting for the European Commission? Because these seem to be the guys that make most of the decisions.
Well, the presidency is sort of an evolving institution, and Jean-Claude Juncker was elected under this new model where parties that you might support indicate in advance what broader grouping they're part of in Europe, and those broader groupings put up a candidate, and the idea is meant to be that if you vote for a party in the UK, you kind of know who the European candidate is across all the parties. But it's a work in progress because obviously an electorate of half a billion voters for half a billion people, it's a tough ask to develop that. But I think our main aim, given all the various difficulties around European democracy and the UK's role in it at the moment, is, as Tim says, get people on the electoral register in the next few days, turn them out to vote on the 23rd of May, and that will be part of the story like we've seen in the locals about people expressing such disdain for our broken politics, which has had the curtain drawn back on it by the Brexit process. It's really not fit for purpose, and there's lots of good positive ideas out there for change. We should get on with them.
Darren Hughes, Chief Executive of the Electoral Reform Society, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Have a nice weekend.
Maybe you should just bring Martin Summers in here. Martin, you're a Labour member. You've had a very bad night, but not quite as bad as the Conservatives. But, I mean, it does seem as if the electorate, number one, staying at home. A lot of them aren't voting. And number two, when they are voting, they're voting against the two main parties. And perhaps this has got something to do with the fact that, as Darren just said there, our political process is broken, and Brexit has shown that.
Well, I totally agree with the views expressed by Darren there. I've always been an electoral reformer, but I'm in the Labour Party. I'm not sure whether I'd be in the majority or the minority these days. But
isn't it turkeys voting for Christmas? Labour Party's never going to vote for this, is it?
That's not true. In actual fact, the split inside the Labour Party between the left and the right was fought out in New Zealand in the early 1980s, where they voted Labour under...
That's not the question I asked you. I asked you about whether the Labour Party now would vote for proportional representation when it would mean they had less chance of getting power.
Well, I'm just giving you my view, Tony. I tried to push Jeremy Corbyn about this when he was first standing to be leader of the Labour Party. I spoke at the meeting where he came to Bristol to try and get his support from the Labour members, and I asked him the question, why don't you support PR? And he hedged his bets on it. He said, what he said is, I'm in favour of a royal commission to look into everything to do with the electoral system.
And that's what politicians say when they don't really want to do
it.
In
New Zealand, the left wing of the Labour Party picked this up and ran with it in 1982, and they smashed the existing first-past-the-post system. They then, the left of the Labour Party then swept to power in alliance with the Greens and renationalised the railways on day one. That's what you do if you're serious. And of course, we've gotten proportional representation in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland as a result of a civil war. We've got to have it.
Eleanor, just discussing PR, what do you think Parliament would look like if we had PR?
I think there would be more smaller parties. I think part of the problem we have in politics in this country is that in order to get anyone under first past the post, Labour and Conservative have to hold themselves together in such large, broad coalitions. And what you get is government by the people who are least principled and most able to hold together for the party regardless. And what you would see under proportional representation is you could have Momentum Labour and you could have Progress Labour, or you could have TIG or whatever. You could have the sort of UKIP-y end of the Conservatives, and you could have the kind of touchy-feely, hugger-hoodie, modernising Conservatives. They could actually form meaningful parties and give people an actual choice of what they want the government coalition to look like, rather than having a coalition that's decided by who holds their nerves and can stand each other for the longest.
Tim?
Well, with PR, you would actually have parties bringing forward policies that you can then go out and vote for. So the problem at the moment is, to win elections, the big parties form big coalitions. And what they do is they actually then push back their real beliefs to actually form a policy which they think you'll vote for, rather than the policies they really believe in. And actually, I think that's what people want to see from their politicians. They want to see passion. They want to see belief in what they're standing on. And I think if we had that, actually people could go out, they would engage those with those politicians more, and we'd actually see politicians standing on those policies. And then, yes, at the end of the day, odds are one party probably doesn't win completely by themselves, and there has to be a choice from those policies. But at least you've been engaged right at the beginning. At the moment, what happens is you're engaged right at the end. The parties have already stitched up what the policies are, and you've not had a real chance to vote on them.
I'm going to bring Ian Robinson in on this. Ian, sitting very patiently at the end there, if you can give us your views on what you think. Because, I mean, this local elections, not in Bristol, but in other parts of England, and we've seen something like six or seven times more Conservatives, maybe five, six times more Conservative councillors lost than Labour councillors. But clearly the voters are saying we're fed up with the two main parties.
Well, they're definitely fed up with the Conservatives. You know, the Conservatives promised to be the party of fiscal responsibility, and yet they've doubled the national debt. You know, they dropped the ball on that one. They promised Brexit, kicked all that hornet's nest up, and then haven't actually delivered. So they've isolated their core voters. Labour, too wishy-washy. A lot of people don't like Corbyn. A lot of people don't like the way Labour politicians say that they're going to do one thing and then do another, and they seem to have manoeuvred themselves out of the way of their core electorate, the working class people.
There seems to be a bit of a backlash against Corbyn and Labour when it comes to Brexit, particularly because both Conservative and Labour said, oh, well, we're going to implement Brexit, and now it's all been pushed down the road. There's this kind of, I mean, I love it. It's weird. It's spooky. It's like Halloween, you know. That's when we're supposed to be leaving. But my guess is we won't even leave then. What do you think is the way around this? Are we going to be able to fix it?
That's a really complicated question. I don't think either the main political parties or any of the main political parties understand what to do about it. Do you go for a second referendum? If so, what do you do about with 17 point whatever million people that voted for it? You know, you've got to respect the will of the electorate. Otherwise, what's the point in being involved in politics in the first place?
I'm quite cynical. I think that the reason they're kicking it down the road is because they know loads of pro-Brexit voters are going to be dying in the meantime. And that when there's a new vote in a few years' time, there'll be a lot more young people who are able to vote who've been might be more pro-Remain.
Especially as they're all, you know, brought up on social media, and social media is a way to reach them. You know, that's the change in face of communications with the electorate.
Well, that's one of the things that Darren brought up there. I'll ask you first, Eleanor, then you, Tim. What do you make of this, what he was saying there about the increasing influence of Facebook and people like this on people's election vote?
Yes, I think as Darren said, it just is a problem of the legislation just not keeping up with the changes in technology. When you stand for election in this country, there are very strict rules on how much you're allowed to spend in the run-up to an election. And it's a way of keeping our elections free and fair, that you can't just come in and outspend the opposition.
Well, yeah, I'm afraid you can, actually. You can, certainly if you're the Conservative Party in Kent, you can spend almost whatever you want and then you can get away with it.
Yeah, no doubt people try to work around those rules as much as they can. But when it comes to Facebook advertising or Twitter promotion, there just are no limits, because that doesn't count as campaign spending. And so people have been throwing money at those. We don't know who they are. We don't know. We know who some of them are, but we don't know how much they've put into it. And it's been a real job of work to try and find out what's been going on. And it's just because the legislation has not remotely kept up with the changes in technology and the way that people are getting their information now.
Okay, before we hear from you, Tim, I just want to run through the actual results, because the Liberal Democrats have done very well, the best, in fact, added an extra 644 seats in yesterday's local elections. Do you know who's next? Most favourite? No, I know you're waving your hands there. No, it's none of the above is the next favourite. Well, I imagine that is people, possibly the Brexit Party, because I know some of them are standing, but also independent councillors are doing very well. They added 619 councillors. The next is the Greens, adding 180. And then we saw the losses, the first bunch of losses are 80 losses, and that's to Labour. Then the UK Independence Party, they've done really badly. Actually, I'm not sure quite what I mean, that is a massive proportion. It's something like they only now got 8% of the councillors, although they've lost something like 92% of the councillors they had, UKIP. And we'll be hearing in a minute from their launch of their European elections campaign. But by far the worst are the Conservatives, lost 1,229 councillors. Martin, why do you think the Conservatives have been punished so severely?
Well, their core vote is not happy with the May's deal, and they basically stayed home. I think that's, you know, as Tim said, we shouldn't be gloating too much here or reading too much into it. The electorate is split on left-right lines, and you know, the Conservatives have paid the price because they're not right-wing enough for their own voters. So that's really what's happened there. And we will see if Farage can pick up those voters on the 23rd. But I think the surge for the Liberal Democrats shows that, you know, there's certainly fight in the Remain camp as well, and it's going to be very interesting. You know, extra time, here we come.
Okay, Tim, so why have you done so well? I mean, it sounds like a silly question, but it's either of two things, isn't it, really? Either that there's actually loads and loads of Remain voters out there just patting you on the back for wanting to reverse the vote or have a second vote, and the other thing is that you're actually just very good at grassroots campaigning.
I think it's a mixture of both. I think a lot of this is we are good at grassroots campaigning. We do strongly believe in being community representatives, and we actually think being a representative on a council is an important role and not just sort of a troop to use to get an MP elected. At the same time, without any doubt, Brexit has overshadowed these elections. Yes, some Conservatives have stayed at home. But yesterday, I was out in Mendip. I was walking the villages of a certain Jacob Rees-Mogg. And the turnout in the Mendip ward was, I believe, over 50%. Yet, the Liberal Democrats got two-thirds of the vote in that ward.
Okay, so I'll put a link up on our show page to the results maps chart if you're interested in that sort of thing. But in the meantime, let's hear from the UK Independence Party's rather shambolic launch of their European elections bid. Well, I mean, it has to be said that there's been this sort of lurch to the right. And in fact, as one of the Channel 4 reporters says on this shortened report from Channel 4, that there's this whole idea that Islam is a death cult, as seems to have wound its way into the UK Independence Party. As a result, I think that the voters have punished them today in the local elections, or yesterday. Let's have a listen to the launch of their bid anyhow.
It was 5 years ago when UKIP took the most seats at the European parliamentary elections. Now only three of those 24 MEPs still represent the party, and the leader, Nigel Farage, has gone. Still, they fight on.
UKIP is the authentic party of Brexit. We're the true party of Leave.
Behind Jeremy Baton on stage, a selection of the candidates.
There wouldn't be European elections if the referendum decision had been honoured. The democratic decision of 17.4 million people has been deliberately and cynically betrayed by the political class.
The spectre of Mr. Farage weighed heavily at this conference.
I don't follow UKIP. I like Nigel Farage, I like, because he's got good rhetoric and he seems to know what he's talking about.
Mr. Baton has proved a controversial party leader, repeating his belief that Islam is a death cult and taking on former English Defence League founder Tommy Robinson as an advisor. And there are questions now over his choice of some of the new candidates. Carl Benjamin on the left, a YouTuber known as Sargon of Akkad, and Mark Meakin, or Count Dankula. First, Mr. Benjamin. 3 years ago, he tweeted this about a Labour MP: "I wouldn't even rape you," at Jess Phillips. And Mr. Meakin, fined £800 in 2018 for filming a pet dog giving Nazi salutes. Last night, he said this.
"He couldn't afford a hookah, so he had to rape. And it's even worse if you're a female student, because not only are you poor, but you're always getting raped."
We asked about last night's comments.
"We were all poor students, weren't we? We couldn't afford a hookup, so we had to rape. Words of your poor female student. Not only are you poor, you keep getting raped. Jeremy, are you willing to associate yourself with comments on rape?"
I wasn't at the show. I don't condone any comments or jokes about that. This was part of, I believe, a stand-up comedy show.
So what did the female UKIP candidates sharing the stage with these men think?
"I have to trust Gerard that he's doing the right thing on that.
You think that rape is worthy of comedy?"
No, I don't.
"You're telling me that you're worried about these men out on rape charges, and yet you have people making light of rape.
Can I just say, please ask Carl Benjamin, I don't even know what he said."
Mr. Baton says UKIP is now the party of ordinary, decent people and has ignored a call from some in the local party in Swindon to deselect Carl Benjamin.
So it was Victoria McIntosh on Channel 4 News. This whole idea of Islam being a death cult, Martin, doesn't seem to have rang true with the voters.
I think they've become very shambolic, as you said, and they've rowed a lot amongst themselves, and I'm not unhappy to see the way that they've been punished at the polls yesterday. But of course, many of the voters and the ideas that around it are still out there, and Farage's Brexit party can't be written off in the same breath as that. Of course, there's still some pretty nasty views to be held by some of their backwards people, but we shall see. Ballot boxes are what it's all about, as we've been talking about on the whole show.
Eleanor, what about these references to rape? That sounds a little bit extreme, and trying to make a joke out of it isn't necessarily a good electoral platform.
Yes, it doesn't sit very well with claiming to be the party of ordinary decent people, because the ordinary decent people that I know don't think that rape is a comment that you can joke about.
Tim?
Yeah, well, it's clear that UKIP have decided to lurch to the right. You know, there's no doubt now that they are a far-right party. And if people choose to vote for them, that is what they're backing. They are now no different to the BNP. It is a shame to see that they've made that decision, and some of their candidates are clearly horrendous, some of their views. But we have a democratic process here, and what we have is a chance on May the 23rd to go out and make sure that nobody from UKIP is elected. I mean, certainly from a progressive party, I think Eleanor and myself would urge people to go out and vote for fellow progressives. That's a real way to send a message to UKIP, is to make sure they don't get any votes, and we support progressive parties.
Well, yesterday UKIP had 166 councillors, now they've got only 30. What do you make of this lurch to the right with UKIP, Ian?
Well, they're just reverting to type, you know. They're Tory light, so they're just as racist, just as the party itself, not necessarily the people that vote for it. You know, they've been.
I mean, it sounded like that woman there who was a candidate was almost caught unawares. It's almost like she's maybe from a previous generation of UKIP people before Gerard Batten and the far right and Tommy Robinson arrive.
Indeed, but looking at the results, you've got to wonder why they lost so many seats. Is it because they haven't actually represented their electorate very well?
Okay, well, let's just talk about Bristol now. Let's move on to talk about our elections, because we've got an election for mayor here, haven't we, next year? And that should be fun. Can I just have from you, Tim, who your candidate's going to be? Just give us an idea of who they are.
Yep, our candidate is Mary Page. We have just selected her, and she's been very clear. Her number one policy is to get rid of the post of mayor. So if you vote for Mary Page, you're voting for a candidate who's going to make sure that we do have another referendum in 2022, and we could have finally abolish this post, which has cost this city millions of pounds.
She's anti-Mary Page, really.
Well, she's anti-mayor.
Okay. Eleanor, what about your candidate?
Our candidate is Sandy Hall-Riven, and we did talk about this idea of putting up an anti-mayor candidate, indeed doing it jointly, but we felt at the end of the day we wanted to put up a candidate who actually wanted to do the job. We can't get rid of the role of mayor before 2022, so we are looking to elect a candidate who's going to be doing the job for at least 2 years, whatever happens. And so we felt it was important to put forward a candidate who actually wants to do the job, who wants to make the difference in Bristol and take action rather than talking about taking action.
Apparently the Labour candidate is going to be Marvin Rees again, Martin. Are you surprised about that? Because there were some other candidates who were stopped from standing against him, weren't there?
Well, being as he's the incumbent mayor, it would have been a pretty big shock if he wasn't selected as the candidate, is all I can say. And
so why was this, there were the moves made against candidates to stop them standing against
him? Well, I mean, there's some people
actually saying that they would even be able to get nominated to stand as councillors, for example.
Well, I mean, what's happened? I mean, he is the mayor, and he's got all the patronage and power that goes with being the mayor. And frankly, we've been trying to avoid reselection, deselection stuff in the Labour Party because it's potentially a can of worms. So there's been all sorts of tiptoeing around all of this. I mean, if momentum was really to be, you know, the kind of far left clique, organised clique that they claim to be, then we would already have deselected loads of people who were sitting MPs and councillors. But there's been a kind of a truce about that. You know, we're trying to avoid an internal civil war. So that's why we're trying to avoid basically deselecting people, because it could turn into a bloodbath.
I mean, surely the whole point here is that the best person stands, and Marvin isn't necessarily the best one. Not everybody in Bristol, no. Labour parties would say Marvin is the best person.
Well, I mean, there's some would definitely agree with you, Tony, but the power of being the incumbent is very strong in any system.
Anyway, apparently there's,
you know, it's very hard to topple people who are at the top of the tree, because they're at the top of the tree and they've got all the resources and the kind of influence that goes with that.
There have been some ballots taking place around the city, what they call affirmative ballots, and the statement by Marvin Rees to these, I've got a copy of, what he says, Martin, he says, as your Labour mayor, I'm proud to have led an administration bringing, I'll put a copy of this up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, I've led an administration bringing our values to City Hall, very nice. We have prioritised frontline council services, so despite massive Tory cuts, we're proud to have, and this is where it starts getting a bit peculiar, secured the future of all Bristol's libraries. Well, actually, Marvin wanted to close the libraries, so he's kind of on the one hand saying we've secured the future of the libraries. On the other hand, he was trying to close them.
Well, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was once put under pressure after he was elected to be President of the United States.
And, Marvin is Bristol's
FDR. I'm just going to make a point, if you'd let me finish. And he basically, various more radical people were coming to him, trade unionists and other community activists, and saying, we want you to do this, we want you to do that, various things that they wanted him to do. And he said, great, you've got to make me do those things. Marvin is in a position where he's backed down on the libraries because enough community row was raised that he realised it was political suicide to close them.
He's congratulating himself for saving the libraries.
Well, he would do. He's a politician, Tony.
What about the council tax reduction scheme, the £40 million council tax reduction scheme? He tried to cut that too, and he's congratulating himself now for saving it.
If you want my honest view, is I don't believe in having mayors either. I'm with Tim and the Liberal Democrats on this. But ultimately, what my main beef with Marvin is he's been trying to be a follow-on to Ferguson and to the whole idea that mayors make a difference. I'm a grassroots Labour Party activist. I don't believe mayors make any difference. It's national politics that decides everything. I don't believe in this community stuff either.
He brings mayors from all over the world here.
Well, indeed, and that's exactly the sort of thing that a Labour mayor should just be turning around to us and giving us the blood, sweat and tears speech. It's a terrible situation. There's not a lot we can do, but the Labour Party is about winning national elections, not fiddling while Rome burns in Bristol.
Anyway, Ian, what do you make of the claim by Marvin Rees here that he is the person that saved the life? And he's also the person that saved the council tax reduction scheme. In other words, I mean, what actually he was proposing himself, Marvin, the mayor, was proposing was that the people with absolutely no income and no money whatsoever were going to be forced to pay £1,000 plus a year council tax. Well, I mean, where were they supposed to find that? I mean, that sounds like a way of recruiting people to work for organised crime or something.
Indeed. I mean, Marvin clearly lives in a different reality than the rest of us. You know, this is... he claims to save all this money, but he gave colonoscopy, or whatever her name was, £100,000 he didn't need to give her. Yeah,
Anna Klonowski.
Well, colonoscopy, whatever you want to call her. Yeah, he then got Colin Moulton. Yeah, we're employing him at £1,400 a day. Yeah, he's never been through a recruitment process. Yeah, despite the head of pay service writing to... Mike Jackson, this is. He wrote to Marvin in January and said, put him through the competitive recruitment process for the role. He hasn't done that. That's like £300,000 a year.
But, I mean, this is the whole point we've got a mayor, Ian, is that he's someone that can get things done. He doesn't have to go through all that red tape.
Well, like the constitution of Bristol City Council. All that red tape.
And I know, what do you make of the statement by Marvin to internal Labour Party people that he's responsible for saving the libraries and saving the council tax reduction scheme?
I mean, I think it's a clever way round to claim it. First, you threaten something, and then when a campaign... I mean, the council tax reduction scheme, Green councillors really campaigned against that. Acorn, who are... tenant rights activists, did an absolutely amazing campaign where they were knocking on doors, getting people signed up. They were going along to Labour councillors' surgeries and demanding that they do something about it. And the pressure built up to a point where Marvin just could not ignore that, and he backed down. And then, you know, we've saved it from ourselves, but we don't mention that bit of the sentence. It's just ridiculous.
Also, Tim, what we've had is the Labour Party Bristol Mayor affirmative ballot, they call it, these special meetings, the model agenda sent around. And that shows that any Labour Party members that turn up, they get their membership checked at the meeting, and then the mayor's statement is read out, which that takes 15 minutes to read out of the whole thing. And each member can then speak for only once and for not longer than 3 minutes, up to a total of 30 minutes. Now, that gives 10 members a chance to speak, and then there's a vote. I mean, is that normally the way that local branches of political parties operate to make decisions?
Well, not in the Liberal Democrats. In the Liberal Democrats, you have to face re-selection. And if someone wants to stand against you, they can stand against you. But clearly, in the Labour Party, things are done differently. But, I mean, what we have here is we have had a mayor make a difference, to be fair. Marvin has wasted £50 million of council taxpayers' money. He's put £37 million into an an energy company, which we all know we're not never going to see that money back
again. That was set up originally by Ferguson.
Oh, it was set up by Ferguson, but Ferguson did not give it £37 million. I believe George Ferguson gave it £4 or £5 million. The other £32 million has come under this mayor. Another £12 million was wasted on the arena site. That's £12 million gone, which this mayor scrapped. And then added on to that, his office is now costing us in excess of £1 million a year. It is clear this city cannot afford this waste of space position any longer. It is time to get rid of the mayor and actually reinvest that money back into its residents and its services.
Martin?
Well, I'm always opposed to having mayors. I voted for Marvin because he's the Labour candidate. I'm willing to listen to everything that people say.
We've just heard from Tim that you know it's a good idea to have a re-selection each time. It just concentrates.
Until the sort of internal struggles in the Labour Party with the momentum and so on, there were no re-selections at all. Once you were in place, you're in place. And as I said earlier, we've shied away from having compulsory re-selections. Selections because the potential for a civil war in the party is obvious.
Okay, well, we've just heard from Ian and Tim about some of the massive millions. I mean, again, Tim, what's the total you think that Marvin has wasted? What you say is true. Of course, we have invited Marvin on the show many times, but he doesn't want to come on.
It is at least £50 million. I mean, I can list other areas that I believe money's been wasted, but those are the big headline areas. I mean, there's the Anna Klonowski money. You know, that was £100,000. There was the Nicola Yates money. That was £200,000. And it just keeps going on and on and on. And
this is trying to run taxpayers' money. Something is... It's almost as if he's a businessman. He's sitting in an office trying to run a business rather than a council.
Well, he's not a very good businessman because he seems to keep losing money.
Okay. Now, down to the other end of the scale, we've got a lot of homeless in the city. The number has been increasing and increasing, mainly due to things like universal credit and the Tory austerity, benefit sanctions, people being evicted, etc. And Marvin did appear, the mayor, Labour mayor, yesterday to do a YouTube film. I think it's called Meet the Mayor, where you can ask live questions on Facebook. And I thought I'd have a little look at that. And there was a question which was asked by Henry Palmer, who's a local campaigner and a comedian, about the bear pit and about the number of people who are homeless living down there now and what Marvin thinks is going to happen to them. So let's have a listen to Marvin the Mayor now. It's only fair.
Henry Palmer, what's to become of the homeless people in the bear pit, Bristol? Henry of BS5. There's many things happening for rough sleepers in Bristol. It's the homes building, the interventions we're making. What I would say, actually, feeling just drawing on the last question as well, what can people do to help society in Bristol? What I would suggest is really to in getting involved in rough sleeping, to support the organisations that are approaching this with a genuine expertise and accreditation. I would suggest not doing it alone, but to work through those organisations so that if you're supporting those people who interact with a genuine expertise, when you interact with an individual, they will be able to assess whether this individual simply needs a roof and walls, whether this individual needs support with addictions, whether they need support with their mental health, whether there is a way of reconnecting this individual with their families who can offer them that social support, because we all need that social support. That's one of the reasons some of us are more resilient than others, not because of any internal strength we have, but because of our social network. So I'd really encourage you to support those formal organisations so that our approach is coordinated and done with a genuine expertise. What's to become of the homeless? We're doing our best to make sure that we have no rough sleepers in Bristol. And actually, one of the visions we set out is that Bristol should be a city in which no one has to sleep on the streets. That's the vision that all those organisations have bought into, and we are committing to delivering together. As a council, a health service, a voluntary sector, working with a criminal justice system, business as well, who are backing this as well. because it's part of the city's image of whether people can live here and whether people are tripping over people on the way to shops or not. You know, we've got to get on top of that for part of what we are and what we stand for as a city. So thanks for that question.
Well, I don't know if Marvin actually has been down to the bear pit recently, but you're not tripping over people in the bear pit. There are actually people now living down there in containers, which is actually a part of apparently one of the council's programmes. Ian, I think I'll start with you on this. The mayor seems to be saying there, I mean, there's quite a lot of management speak in there, and he seems to be sort of answering the question with more questions rather than actually addressing it. But you're not tripping over people in the bear pit. What they've done is they're not sleeping on the streets. They've found containers that they're living in and other structures that they are actually making somewhere for themselves, but apparently that they are rough sleepers. I mean, I don't know if he really knows what's going on down there.
Well, I'd be surprised if he's been there. I mean, Marvin and Bristol City Council make big noises about caring for the homeless people. It's not just people you're tripping over in the street. It's people that are sofa surfing, people that are in high cost accommodation. They're migrant workers, etc. There's a lot of homelessness in Bristol that's not being dealt with. Take case in point, the people that were down by the M32 in the vans. You know, Marvin's caring attitude to that is there. Now next to probably one of the largest incinerators in the UK.
Where's that?
It's in Avonmouth. They basically stuck them opposite the old Savalco factory.
Now, a lot of people in caravans and travellers are told to go to Avonmouth, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a dedicated traveller site, which is a different site completely. That's far nicer, the traveller site, than where these people have been stuck.
There is an agenda there as well, isn't it, in a way? That travellers that are living in Bristol, one way or reason or another, are being told, well, you can't stay in Bristol, you've got to go to Avonmouth. We had that at the Greenbank business.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, as far as I understand the legislation, you know, the council has to make provision for travellers. Where that is and how that is dispensed is quite a grey area, as I understand it.
Okay, well, Tim, what do you make about what the council's doing with rough sleepers? And is it adequate?
Well, it's clearly not adequate because it is a major problem. I mean, I want to be unusually slightly fair to the mayor. I think he genuinely has tried to make this a top issue of his administration, and I think they have been overwhelmed by the problem. And a lot of this has been caused a mixture of reasons, but very clearly changes in benefits. The central government have caused a lot of this, as well as, of course, increases in house prices here and increases in rents have also added to it. There's lots of different reasons we are seeing this increase in homelessness. What we could, I think, all agree is so far what has happened is inadequate. We have not yet responded to this crisis in any way the need we should do. I think the mayor has tried to make it a priority, but he has not been effective. And I think an example of how he's not effective was his answer there. He didn't actually even bother to answer the guy. He just asked him a load of questions back and pretty much said, what are you going to do about it? And that's the way he responds to any form of challenge. He is completely out of his depth. What we need to do is get rid of him as mayor and actually then get rid of the post of mayor.
Eleanor?
Yeah, I think...
On the homelessness.
I think there's a fundamental problem in this country that houses are treated as investments first and foremost and places to live somewhere secondary. And so we're always going to have a problem of homelessness in this country unless we do something structural about how we treat our housing and how we protect our tenants' rights. On the subject of Marvin and his response, I do see slightly worrying signs with Marvin of a slightly Victorian attitude, that there's a kind of deserving poor and an undeserving poor, and that those in the bear pit are not being sort of orderly and doing as they're told, and so they're undeserving poor. I mean, he mentioned something about addictions, and at the moment there's a consultation on looking at changing the way that we deal with addictions in Bristol and basically stopping funding maintenance therapy and pushing people into abstinence. But some people are just not ready to deal with their addictions. They're just not ready to move on. And so you're going to push them back onto street drugs, you're going to push them back possibly into crime, and you're going to have a massively counterproductive approach. And I think it's the same with homelessness.
Okay. Now, back at the beginning of April, the council tried to evict people at the bear pit and just failed. They just didn't manage to do it because the
dirty squatters, are we allowed to call them that, got a better solicitor who was far better, and then they had to just back off. I don't know what's happening with that, but I think they're going to have to do something about it because they're quite dug in now. We're going to come back and discuss Gavin Williamson, the Defence Secretary's sacking, after this.
If you're an EU citizen living in the UK, you will need to apply to the EU Settlement Scheme. The scheme is fully open and you have plenty of time to apply. It is free and all you need is your passport or ID card and to complete an online form. Support is available if you have any questions. To find out more and to apply, visit gov.uk/EU Settlement Scheme. Irish citizens or those with valid indefinite leave don't need to apply.
Tim Kent from the Lib Dems here in Bristol, what do you make of the sacking of the Defence Secretary this week? He was asked to resign, refused. Did he really do it? The Huawei leak, do you think?
Well, clearly, this was a major security breach, this leak.
But did he do it?
We have no idea.
And he's denied it.
I mean, he's been accused, he's been sacked, no evidence has been produced. He's denied
on his children's lives. Now, that's a fairly extreme thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a very extreme thing and probably not a very wise thing to say. But he's denied it. I think now it's time that the evidence was produced. Because otherwise, what we're saying is a major security leak may have occurred and someone's been sacked with no evidence. That could mean the leaker is still there.
I think we want
to see the proof.
I mean, as I understand it, the evidence they've given is that he wouldn't fully cooperate with their inquiry. But he's denied that, Eleanor.
Yeah, I think that's a worrying precedent to have an elected person pushed out of their role because they won't cooperate. Who defines what is adequate cooperation? It does seem very odd.
Martin, could it be just that Theresa May needed something to the day before the local elections to make it look like she still had some authority?
I mean, the rules are that she can decide who's in the cabinet and she doesn't have to give a reason. If she wants to sack somebody, she can.
Has he just been hung out to dry, do you think?
Well, possibly. What the real struggle in the cabinet, including within this committee, the National Security Committee, is the Americans are pushing that nobody is to do any deals with Hawaii. Because, of course,
we've got to get the pronunciation
right.
Ken Clark last night on Question Time calling it Hawaii.
Yes, all right. Well, let's just call it Hawaii for the sake of it.
No, it's Huawei.
Huawei. Well, anyway, the point is the Americans are pushing that nobody's to do any business with them. Don't forget they've arrested the chief executive of Huawei in Canada, and she's about to be extradited to the US to stand trial, supposedly, for for working with the Iranians. Now, what's actually happening inside the Tory cabinet is some people are very, very pro-Trump, and other people less so. And this is a litmus test of that. And of course, Williamson was definitely, because I understand it, there were five votes for engaging with them, five votes against. Theresa May's was the casting vote, and therefore they decided that's what they were going to do. But some people don't like that because they want to go with the Americans and go to war with China because we're just about to send an aircraft carrier to China. Remember?
Just the final one on everyone, just very, very quickly, if you can just comment on this. This is this nuclear weapons Thanksgiving service today at the Westminster Abbey. Ian, what do you make of that?
What is there to make of it? It's insanity, you know.
Eleanor? I don't really see that nuclear weapons are something that we should be thankful for.
Tim?
I think it's a very, very strange idea.
Well, you can probably imagine what I think about it, Tony. I won't swear on air.
Okay, so it's complete and utter nonsense. So the idea is apparently to just discredit the church, and they're doing it themselves. Thanks for to our guest Lib Dem councillor for Hengrove and Whitchurch Park, Tim Kent, Eleanor Cumley from the Green Party leader, and Ava Mouth, environmental campaigner Ian Robinson, who may hang on for a bit afterwards. Join us after the US-owned Comcast News at 7 as we spread our wings around the world.
Live from the Sky News Centre.